love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
Okay, so let's start here. Let's name the times in life when you need a tent. Can we do that? I think when you're camping, you're a Boy Scout, maybe you need a tent. Maybe if you're getting married outside, you're having a big celebration or a party, or you're setting up a circus. But that's about the only times that you need a tent. The tent that was put up at Berkeley for the latest protest was totally different. This tent is an empathy tent. Oh, man. Doesn't that make you feel all warm inside? An empathy tent. I love that. We should have those everywhere. Now, in the empathy tent, it was designed to give opposing forces a safe space to flesh out their political disagreements in a peaceful empathy tent. Now, the right-wing group Patriot Prayer was speaking on campus, and, you know, when you have a prayer group, you need an empathy tent. You also probably need some armed guards around those people praying. So they were speaking, and the leftist group, unlike the prayer group, the leftist group called By Any Means Necessary, and Antifa showed up. What could possibly go wrong? You've got a bunch of people praying and people who follow the idea of by any means possible. Good thing they had a tent there, because it wasn't long before the representatives from both sides were placed into the tent. Guys, 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 come on, everybody into the tent to talk it out. Well, of course, in today's world, at Berkeley, talking turned to yelling, which turned pushing, which turned to fighting. Almost immediately, the brawling escalated to the point where the empathy tent toppled over. Police officers had to rush to the scene. Four people were arrested, including an activist, for by any means necessary. What? Yvonne has been arrested? She wasn't using any means to get her point across, was she? Yvonne has an interesting profession for an extreme left-wing activist. She is a middle school teacher. Now how confident do you feel in the future of our country, right? She was arrested on suspicion of rioting, obstruction, and battery. This is not Yvonne's first arrest, and this nonsense really didn't come cheap. You don't get an empathy tent just any old place. This protest comes after UC Berkeley preemptively spent $600,000 to ensure protests didn't turn violent when Ben Shapiro spoke on campus. Over $500,000? Think of how many empathy tents that money could buy. We live in a world now where apparently people with different opinions can't talk to each other in a civil fashion at all. We live in a world where it costs $600,000 to stop middle school teachers from becoming violent. And even when you spend all that money, that doesn't work. We live in a world where empathy tents exist. Our inability to be considerate human beings is making our world a much more dangerous place.
So I came down here today to go to math discussion, and I see all this and I have no idea what they're protesting, why they're protesting, or anything like that. And if you look at them, it's ridiculous. You got a guy with purple hair with a lightsaber talking about Hitler. Like it's hard for me to take any of this seriously. The only impact this has on me is that now I have more work to do last minute because I could not go to math class today.
Oh. Wait a minute, you had a guy with a lightsaber and how was he dressed with the purple hair? He was talking. Berkeley has once again shown us it's not the bastion of education. It's a circus. Which in the end makes that tent appropriate after all.
It's Thursday, September 28th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Let's go to the circus that is the media. There is an awesome, clip that will make you feel all warm inside. Let's all run to the empathy tent for Chuck Todd. Listen to what Chuck Todd said about the U.S. Constitution.
Roy Moore, where the phrase Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him, could very well be your next U.S. senator.
Can we stop there?
If you don't understand just how...
What exactly does that mean? Where the words Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him. What does that mean?
That's interesting. I think maybe he's trying to say...
What?
He's
what?
He's super extra mega Doppler Christian-y.
Yeah.
Like he's over the top Christian. Maybe a little
Listen
too Christian.
That. Listen to that.
Yeah.
Where Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him.
I guess that he's so like he's so extreme on that.
Uh-huh.
He's so far down
uh-huh.
that Christian
rabbit hole.
Road.
Yeah, no, that is what I know.
Like you could say Christian, like a Christian conservative, you could describe a lot of people that way, right?
Mm-hmm.
That don't necessarily talk all the time about God,
mm-hmm.
right? They might have Christian values. They might support generally socially conservative platforms or mm-hmm. whatever.
Uh-huh.
Roy talks about it all the time, maybe too much.
Yes.
Maybe he's thinking about
yeah.
God too much.
Okay.
That's
right.
what he's saying.
Okay. All right. Okay. So go ahead.
Could very well be your next U.S. senator.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't understand just how freaked out some folks in the GOP and the White House are about what that means, then you don't know Roy Moore.
Oh.
First off, he doesn't appear to believe in the Constitution.
Stop!
Wow.
Did you know this?
I didn't know that.
Did you know this when you voted for him? He didn't. He doesn't even believe in the Constitution.
It's a huge problem.
And it's a huge statement today to make.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure Chuck is going to back that up.
As it's written.
Our rights don't come from government. They don't come from a Bill of Rights. They come from Almighty God.
Now, that's just a taste of what are very fundamentalist views that have gotten him removed from office twice as Alabama's Chief Justice.
Wait a minute.
Hold it just a second. That's just a taste. No, that's a whole meal right there. What he just said, that's not a taste. That's the whole thing. That's breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert, snacks. That's all of it.
I feel like we need to hear the whole thing again in context because that's an amazing moment.
Yeah, because I don't understand what he's saying. He doesn't believe in the Constitution. Instead, he believes this crazy idea that your rights don't come from government.
Roy Moore, where the phrase Christian conservative doesn't even begin to describe him, could very well be your next U.S. senator. And if you don't understand just how freaked out some folks in the GOP and the White House are about what that means, then you don't know Roy Moore. First off, he doesn't appear to believe in the Constitution as it's written.
Our rights don't come from government. They don't come from a Bill of Rights. They come from Almighty God.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's just a taste of what are very fundamentalist views that have gotten him removed from office twice as Alabama's Chief Justice.
Okay, so Chuck...
Because you like Chuck.
I like Chuck.
You've been on the show many times.
I like Chuck. I think he's a reasonable, nice guy.
Certainly an informed guy.
He is. This is not. Here's the problem with this. Let's say. I don't know. Let's say Oliver Stone says something like this. You're like, okay, it's Oliver Stone. And you know he's a Marxist, so whatever, okay? You hear somebody like,
what's
her name with the twerking, what's her face?
Miley Cyrus?
Miley Cyrus. Mm-hmm. You hear somebody like Miley Cyrus say something like this, and you're like, it's Miley frickin' Cyrus,
mm-hmm.
of course. You hear a college student say something like this, and you're like, okay, that's concerning. But they're not teaching anything in school anymore. They have an empathy tent. But when you hear the guy who hosts Meet the Press say this with such conviction, that's terrifying.
And to escalate it one further step, saying it with that conviction in a pre-written piece. This is not him in a debate off the top of his head going down the wrong road.
So wait, you're not saying that there were writers, producers, all the way along that were reading that script, preparing this material, talking about it in meetings, and no one said, ah, guys, we're 100% wrong on this. It's not even close. I just want to point out, it's not even close. By saying these things, you're going to look like the biggest idiot on the planet because you've engaged in some sort of revisionist history. But beyond that, it shows you completely misunderstand the entire American standard.
And maybe we should not assume everyone is familiar with this standard, but your rights come from God.
Hold on just a second. I need a moment to, could I build an empathy tent in my head for just a second? Let me just it's nice. It's not one of those cheap white vinyl tents. This is a nice one with the little pointy thing, like, you know, and a little flag on top or something, but not an American flag. God forbid, not an American flag, but just like a little.
It's nice.
Okay. It's air conditioned if you're hot. It's cool if it's hot outside. It's warm if it's cold outside. And there's little throw pillows and maybe rugs. Okay. A place where you can just go and.
Do you feel calm enough now?
I do.
Okay.
So now, Chuck, let's talk about this. Where do your rights come from? Does the U.S. Constitution, the Bill of Rights, is that the source of those rights? Or does it say in the Constitution that there are more rights, but these are just the big ones that we're going to concentrate on, that the government must never violate?
It's a document of, let's say, negative liberties. Is that how you'd?
Yes.
Is that how you'd phrase
in
that?
In fact, in communist Russia, they had a charter of positive liberties, which said these are the things that the government must do. Our Constitution is a charter of negative liberties, saying that these liberties are to never be violated. The government can never do these things. So if the government is, if the document, the Bill of Rights, the most game-changing document of all time, if that is the printing press for rights, what made that document a game-changer? Because I just want you to think this through. Chuck and everybody, could you give me some more of that empathy tent music just for a second, just in case anybody has slipped in, somebody new. Oh. See, it's peaceful, it's warm, it's nice, it's comfortable.
That is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. There's somebody just like you in this tent. Okay. And then there's me. But to concentrate on the person just like you for a second. Okay. We got it. Thank you. Now, what made the Constitution game-changing? Because the world had kings that could just go and just scoop you up, and it could scoop you up, and the king could say, you know what, I'm gonna chop off his head. Why? I don't have to tell you why. Wait, why don't you have to tell me why? Could you answer that one? Yeah, I'm the king. Yeah, but I you're what? I'm the king. You're nothing. Now, the reason why King Arthur was so great in that legend of King Arthur is because King Arthur thought, hey, I'm no better than you. Let's just all be together. That was a benevolent king. And you'll notice that King Arthur didn't exist. Okay, that's a legend. Camelot didn't exist. It was an idea. So the pilgrims came over. And they said, you know what? We only answer to God. And God gives us certain rights. And the government is instituted among men by men to protect those God-given rights.
Who gave them?
God.
Government?
God. No,
oh,
God.
Okay.
I know they will start with G and
O.
Yes.
That's really confusing.
And so you can be, you know, because people have a very short attention span, G-O, it could be government. Mm. I don't know. I didn't read the whole word. Okay. So they were, those were given by God. Because if they're not given by God, then they have to be given by man. And when they're given by man, then a man, any man, left, right, upside down, doesn't matter. Any man can say, you know what? No, I have that right. You don't. That's why the rights, you can call it God. You can call it the universe. You can call it just a really happy star, a happy place.
You could even say, for example, we are endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights. Something, you could phrase it that way, I guess.
I need an empathy tent to be able to hear that kind of language myself. But
is it stressing you out?
It's stressing me out. I don't feel uncomfortable. I feel unsafe.
Oh, my.
Okay, there's no difference between feeling uncomfortable with somebody's idea and feeling unsafe. Let's see. Having a conversation that where somebody's saying something uncomfortable to me and being raped or beaten. No, that's the same. I need a safe zone to hear your unsafe language, Stu. Okay. So stop it. You can call God whatever you want. But you have to understand that if you don't have a God, a higher source other than man, giving rights to you, every single soul, then that means somebody can take those rights away. That was the game-changing idea of America. There's no reason that this was revolutionary at its time. There's no reason if the rights just came from government, because they had always done that.
Glenn Beck.
I like to make these kind of announcements so I don't actually feel the full wrath of my wife while I'm standing there. It gives her a couple of hours to cool down. But we've been asked to see if we could use my plane as a cargo plane for Puerto Rico to get supplies there. So we may be taking our vacation, sweetheart, in Puerto Rico. But just want to throw that out real quick. The problem with this is the cargo, getting the cargo there is hard enough. But then all of the cargo is being left at the airport. And the reason why is because they can't find the truck drivers. There's no cell phones. No, nobody has a cell phone. What about the trucks? Where are the trucks? And there's no fuel to put into the trucks. So all of the cargo is starting to stack up at the airport. We have Team Rubicon going in, and we may just be airlifting people over there. We have Team Rubicon that is on the ground now doing an assessment on exactly what we can do to help. This is kind of like a Marshall Plan kind of thing. The government is really required to help in Puerto Rico on this one. But if you would like to donate, you can go to mercury1.org, mercury1.org for Puerto Rico.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
There's a lot going on with North Korea right now, and we have Michael Malice, who actually went to North Korea. He's the author of Dear Reader, the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il. Also hosts the podcast You're Welcome, which is up on Anthony Cumia's platform, which is pretty cool. And Michael joins us now.
Michael, there are plant closings now from China in North Korea. There's a new travel ban, and there is also... the warm beers on kind of this press junket now, talking about what North Korea did to their son from Ohio. Where are we headed?
Well, let's talk about the warm beers, because the news has just changed in the last 12 hours. The last time I was on the show, the point I had made is that North Korea, you know, in defiance of what we think, tends to keep their hostages safe because you want to return the hostage to get the ransom, right? Otto Warmbier's parents went on air, all these different shows, and said he was severely tortured. His teeth were rearranged by pliers, deaf and blind, just a horrific portrait. However, as soon as, and I'm like, what, did I get it all wrong? If I did get it wrong, you know, and with North Korea, you have to realize, to paraphrase an old line they used about Lillian Hellman, everything they say is a lie, including and the, every word they say. So you really have to kind of read between the lines. The coroner came out and said the parents were not saying what they saw. The coroner said on record his teeth were fine. There were no evidence of broken bones or recently healed bones, and there were no evidence of torture. They didn't do an autopsy. They did an external examination. So we have a discrepancy that I frankly don't know how to reconcile.
Why would, I mean, see, here's my thought, Michael. When I saw the warm beers on, I thought, okay, why is this coming out now? He came home a while ago, and I do not want to play into conspiracies, but if you look at history, when people want to build a case for war, these are the kinds of things that happen.
The
government kind of pushes it out, and, you know, you kind of massage the idea that, you know, these are really bad people and we should go to war. I'm not saying that I don't believe the warm beers. I don't know. But that was the first thought that came into my head. But if the coroner is saying that's not true, what is happening?
For the coroner, who's obviously a reputable person, there's a whole team, for them to say on the record, we're surprised the parents are saying this, this is at the very least very odd. However, in a sense, this is secondary. This young man was murdered. This young man was imprisoned. This young man, according to North Korea, was sentenced to 15 years hard labor for stealing a poster. He was a hostage. So when you have a nation that takes tourists, invited tourists who have a visa, if you have them grabbing people and holding them hostage, this is not a regime that recognizes international law and decency.
And it's also a regime that does do this and much worse to their own people.
Oh, and North Korea has admitted that for decades they've been kidnapping Japanese citizens from Japan and people from South Korea, and keeping them hostage for decades. We think it's to teach people Japanese, to train them to be spies. So this has been going on for a very long time. In fact, in 2001, when the Japanese prime minister visited Pyongyang and they were having talks, bilateral talks, in hopes of normalizing relationships, at the time, the dear leader, Kim Jong-il, admitted this and apologized, thinking that Japan would be like, oh, forget about it, it's not a big deal. And the Japanese were gobsmacked. They couldn't believe that Kim Jong-il was admitting to this in such a cavalier manner, and thinking just an apology would kind of, you know, make it all go away.
Michael Malice is with us. He's the author of Dear Reader. He actually went over and spent time in North Korea and warns that they are a, you know, it's not what you think it is. Can you take me to Donald Trump's speech in the UN back during the World War II, when we were dealing with a crazy dictator named Hitler? FDR did not call him names or anything else, but the Marx Brothers, and probably most famously Charlie Chaplin in something called The Great Dictator, did mock him. And the way to get under the skin of a dictator is to mock them. They do not like that. Donald Trump was told, apparently, by his advisors, do not mock him at the UN. Don't call him names. Donald Trump did. Do you think that was effective for the president in this situation or not?
I can't think of anything smarter to do. Because their whole pretense in North Korea, and they refer to us always as a slur, the U.S. imperialists, Their pretense is that we're quaking in our boots because of Kim Jong-un, just like we had been scared of his father and of his grandfather. And I had met a refugee, and there was that movie that came out with James Franco and Seth Rogen, The Interview, a few years back. And she had said, it would be great if North Koreans saw this movie, not because it's clever or funny, it wasn't, because they would see we are treating him as a laughingstock. Now, this is someone who his grandfather allegedly could walk on water, literally. You know, they're taught these kind of miracles that go around these leaders. So you have to imagine how those translators have to – when you're using syntax, you know, in North Korean, there's a form of language that only the leaders use. It's an honorific. You can't say his name by himself. You have to say Marshal Kim Jong-un or Dear Leader Kim Jong-il. So for them to try to translate something so colloquial as Rocket Man, it would be like, you know, if you were a god and I'm calling you Glennie, it's just you can't even wrap your head around it. Like, it's just a level of familiarity and disrespect.
Would the people in North Korea hear that?
Well, they wouldn't know what to do, because on the one hand, you want to say that, look, President Trump's a lunatic. He's, you know, he's rattling his saber. He's being aggressive. On the other hand, it would be very hard for them to even repeat that he's using such vulgar language, vulgar in a broad sense, to refer the leader. So on the one hand, oh my gosh, he's disrespected. But let me use an extreme example. If another country used a four-letter word in reference to President Trump, the media wouldn't know how to report it. Would they censor the word? Do you say it? If you're saying it, it's just horrific. So this is the quandary he forced North Korea to put themselves in. And this is him showing them, I'm not scared of you, and I don't think you're someone worthy of respect.
Talking to Michael Malice. Michael, there's a couple of interesting developments, one of the things we've been trying to do with North Korea is to get them to somehow have some pressure put on them from China. China is now announcing that they're closing all North Korean-owned companies in their country. Malaysia has a new travel ban with North Korea. Are these things actually coming to fruition finally?
Yes, these are all wonderful, if small, developments, and we can see the consequences in this way. I think it was last week or earlier this week, the North Korean foreign minister had said, this was reported as an escalation when it was a de-escalation. He had said that President Trump has effectively declared war, and that if there's any bombers in North Korea, they're gonna shoot them down, right? Mm-hmm. Let's look what happened. Back in July, they're saying, we are going to bomb Guam. We've got four missiles ready. In August, we're going to attack Guam. Now, they're putting words in President Trump's mouth. They are saying, you are declaring war. We're the victims. We're the good guys. You're the bad guys. There's a difference between, Stu, I'm going to go to your house and burn it down, and if you come to my house, I'm going to shoot you. If the second neighbor might be a crank, I just won't go to his house. The first one's the problem. And this has been how their rhetoric has changed. It has been from, we're going to attack you, to, if you come here, we will defend ourselves, which is definitely a retreat, even though the press treats it as an escalation.
So then what does that mean, Michael? That's really good news. What does that mean for the future? What's coming our way?
One of the best things about how President Trump is dealing with North Korea, and this has also come out in the reports, most Americans don't know what to make of President Trump, right? And if you're from another country, try to explain going from President Obama to President Trump. These two men, even forget their politics, just in terms of personalities and style, are as different as can be. And President Trump has no political background whatsoever to kind of read between the lines, right? So North Korea doesn't know what to make of him, which in terms of negotiation is an extremely effective technique to have in your back pocket, because you don't know what this guy is capable of. So you had better put all your money on diplomacy and negotiation, because if he turns out to be someone capable of pulling the trigger, North Korea has explicitly and repeatedly said they know it would be a disaster for them.
So if you were looking at the doomsday clock, and it's 3 minutes to midnight, the last time we talked, where do you put the hands?
I would put it to four. in my opinion. Because, again, if now, if you had all the UN voting against North Korea, if North Korea is appealing to the international community, if they're changing their tune and are trying to be dignified and legalistic, this is someone who is saying, okay, we took a wrong turn somewhere.
Michael, great news. Thank you so much.
You really need to read Michael Malice's book about North Korea, because it's not only really informative and all true, but really funny. It's written as a first person biography of Kim Jong-il. But all the facts in it are true, you know, where he says that he remembers the day he was born like it was yesterday, and he remembers every detail of the day of his birth. He actually told the country that. It's available everywhere.
Glenn Beck.
I want to thank you so much for listening to us. I want to thank you so much for supporting us, not only today, but over the years. We are in the midst of really doing some dynamic thinking on the future of the media in its entirety. I don't think people really understand. I took a bunch of people out into the hallway yesterday, where we have a big chalkboard, and I said, I just want you guys to... I want you to help me think things through here. I've been saying for a long time that the world is being changed, and all the way down maps. I said, we're going to wake up and the maps are going to be changed and the infrastructure is being changed. And you can either be a part of that changing infrastructure and design it yourself, or you're going to find yourself working for somebody else and you're just going to be in it. And I was talking to some members of the staff yesterday about what's coming in the media. And I said, I want to take you to the Old West for a second. If we look at the Wild West, somebody had just said this to me the other day. It was maybe that Google ethicist who said, you know, it's the Wild West is of the internet is coming to an end. And I think they're right. The Wild West, what it was, is you could go out and you could start a town, and these towns would pop up everywhere, and just where people were congregating. So it might be because it was natural beauty or there were resources or whatever. But once the train started to be built, the states and the territories started to lobby, get the train to come to our town. And if the train didn't come to your town, that town ended up usually a ghost town. If your town was big enough and it was a city, the train would automatically come there. If not, you had to coax the train to come to be able to give you a place. Or if you were a place that had a lot of water or the coal or whatever they needed to keep the train going, the train would come to you. The Wild West was over once the train system was put into place, because then it wasn't just anywhere. The train kind of dictated the growth. The tracks have been laid, and the tracks now have been laid over the last 6 or 7 years. They've been laid by Amazon, Google, Apple, Netflix, Hulu. They've laid the tracks. And even Hulu is kind of an outpost. It's kind of an F troop, kind of out way out in the middle of nowhere. The train tracks have been laid. And I'm sharing this with you because I don't think that conservative media is thinking this through. And it's changed right now. In the last 3 months, there has been dynamic shifts. And the tracks are clearly being laid and are already laid. And you can be your little outpost all you want, but I'm telling you, the tracks are already there. How do we get people on that train or near that train?
Glenn Beck.